Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. According to actress-playwright Alexandra Vassilaris, going into the theater was a rather automatic choice. It was so inbred, so much a part of our enthusiastic selves. Alexandra's uncle is the infamous Bernie Gersten, whose name is synonymous with nonprofit theater in New York City. From 1960 to 1978, he was the associate producer of the New York Shakespeare Festival, and he's been executive producer of Lincoln Center Theater since 1985. His younger brother, Leon, Alex's dad, was a stage manager and later worked on Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows. For a while, both families lived in the same Manhattan apartment building. Alex has acted on stage in film and television, but her passion is playwriting, and she's pretty prolific. Her most recent work, Big Sky, a comedy about a well-to-do family, had its world premiere at LA's Geffen Playhouse in the spring of 2016. Omnium Gatherum, a 9/11-born collaboration with Teresa Rebeck, was a 2004 Pulitzer Prize finalist. It premiered at the Humana Festival and moved off-Broadway, with subsequent regional and international productions. Alex's other plays include The Argument, The Ordinary Yearning of Mirian Budwig, My Thing of Love, and Supple in Combat, both of which were commissioned by and premiered at Steppenwolf Theatre Company. Her play, Mother of Invention, which featured Estelle Parsons, premiered at the Williamstown Theater Festival. Alex has developed several TV projects for HBO and for Killer Moxie Films. A graduate of NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, she's also a member of PEN and leads writing workshops for veterans and women at New York City's Bowery Mission. So, Alex, welcome and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, I mentioned in my introduction that theater is in your DNA. Tell me how and when your interest in the theater was born and cultivated.
Well, when I was about 4 years old, my father was a stage manager in Mineola at the Mineola Playhouse, and he used to put me on a chair backstage next to the stage manager's desk, and I would watch everything from backstage. And I have indelible, vibrant memories from that period, and that was the beginning.
And so at four, you thought to yourself, I want to be on that stage or I want to be my dad?
No, I definitely didn't want to be my dad. I thought it looked like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very intrigued by actors in the process. I was backstage a lot and saw them preparing to go on. And so I had a natural inclination to do that too.
And Mineola is in Long Island. So
yes.
This was definitely off-Broadway theater productions.
Yes. And then my mother was an actress.
Oh.
Growing up, I used to go and see her in little off-Broadway productions at the Theater for the New City. And, of course, that, too, was just so magical when you see your own mother
transform
playing.
Into someone else. Yeah. So then getting on the stage was a natural act for you.
Yes. Well, I went to the High School of Performing Arts.
Oh, in New York City.
Yes.
So clearly you had talent.
Well,
They just don't accept anybody.
Well, I did do, you know, I worked off Broadway. I was in a peculiar Broadway show that was a lot of fun. I worked with wonderful writers. And I think that when I started to have children, I wanted to sort of change my focus.
But that's jumping ahead.
Okay.
Because I want to know what role family played in your life, with having an uncle like Bernie Gersten and a dad, like you said, who exposed you at a very young age to theater. You clearly had to be on some level a receptacle.
To be perfectly honest, I think my mother had more to do with that, because the very nature of who she was, the essential part of her was dramatic. And she was so fascinating. She was so full of contradiction, and that she naturally incurred my curiosity and my, I was perplexed, intrigued, inspired by her contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved her. She was larger than life and hard to just accomplish because she was so complicated. And I think that her complexity naturally just was so theatrical that theater seemed like an extension.
But was it confusing to you to see these differences or this dichotomy in a sense?
I mean, I didn't know it was confusing.
Hello. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I don't think until somebody said, that's confusing, I had no sort of sense of it being intrinsically confusing. And that,
but was there a lot of drama?
It was probably worse for her and more entertaining for me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she was a loving person, so her drama was so theatrical. It belonged on the stage, but instead it was in my home.
I hear you.
So I think that I was naturally drawn to complexity. That was fascinating for me as an actress because I could explore other parts of myself and I could be more than just me off stage. I could be these other characters. I could become people, extensions of people's notions of character that had nothing to do with me. And that was intriguing and familiar.
So on some level, acting was a natural act for you.
Yeah.
And you obviously had some street cred as you were growing up and participating. You were in plays and in productions.
Yeah, I was in a.
Did you get paid?
Quite a lot of plays. Oh, yeah. I was.
You were professional.
I acted at the Vineyard. I acted at on Broadway. I acted at. Now I'm forgetting all the places. I acted at primary stages. I worked. I mean, what I started to feel. I acted at Yale Rep and Center Stage. I started to feel that it wasn't going to be a career as much as I would have jobs doing acting work, and I liked. The people I was working with, and they were very important in my development as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I just started to feel like I couldn't have a family the way I wanted to do it and keep going away to act.
So was it, a natural act for you to go to Tisch School of the Arts at NYU, which, by the way, I'm a graduate of?
Yes. My mother was friends with Olympia Dukakis.
Oh.
My mother was Greek-American. Obviously, so was Olympia, and Olympia was my mentor in grad school, and I was an undergraduate and graduate in a graduate program, but she took me under her wing because I was a young one in that program. They take a few undergraduates in the graduate program every year. I don't know if they do that anymore, but they used to. So she really took me under her wing, gave me my first jobs, and was a big influence on my life as an actress.
What was the biggest coup for you as an actress?
Right out of school, there was a Dario Fo play called We Won't Pay, We Won't Pay, and it moved from the grad program to Off-Broadway. And I thought, well, that's, you know,
I've died and gone to heaven.
Mm-hmm. And then another play that I did with Olympia moved to Broadway, and I was in that as well.
So you earned a living.
Yes.
More than earned a living.
Even though my accountant once said, how do you live on so little? I actually was so proud of myself. And I had a good time.
But as I mentioned, you've been on television, Law and Order, you've been in films, but you don't miss that anymore?
I think, first of all, everybody was on Law and Order.
No, that's a great response. That's true.
I think that I don't really miss the trying to get work.
Yeah.
No.
The hustling.
Yeah, I didn't. That isn't such a good. It's not so suited for me. Mm-hmm. I love the playful part of acting. I mm-hmm. love the dynamics of working with new playwrights. They had a very big effect on my life.
So when did you move from acting to playwriting? And did you always feel as if you had something to say?
Well, I worked on a play with Terry Kinney, Lawrence Fishburne, Jane Kesmerick. God, who else was in that production? Of Loose Ends. It was a revival of Loose Ends by Michael Weller that Irene Lewis directed. And I met Terry Kinney, who was one of the founding members of Steppenwolf. And I told him that I had a play that I had been working on.
How long ago was this?
It was 1993.
So you had started writing something.
I started writing. I took a class that play that I worked on in class, the professor said, you should write. You should definitely keep writing. And this could be a play. I showed that one act to a friend of mine who's a playwright, very substantial playwright in Canada, George F. Walker, wonderful playwright. I've done many of his plays. And he said, you make this one act into a full length. I did. I submitted it to Steppenwolf. Laurie Metcalf was interested in playing the part. It quickly got on the main stage. That was a little bit of a storybook beginning.
Fantasy almost?
Yeah.
Well,
suddenly I was in the room with Laurie and Terry Kinney and Katie Irby, and they were all doing my play.
Reading your words.
Yeah. And then they chose the play, and then that play won a Jefferson Award.
And what was that play about?
That was called My Thing of Love, and it was about a marriage that was challenged by an infidelity.
And where did that come from?
It came from, you know, little pieces of experiences I had had. And like I said, I am an observer.
Yes.
So when you said, was it confusing for you intrinsically? Actually, it was very entertaining. And it was so complicated that it made me a better writer. Because indeed, characters can be complex and interesting before they're judged, you know?
Sure.
We naturally judge people in life as being acceptable, unacceptable.
It's part of human nature to judge.
It's fun to judge. And I mean, I like to judge for the sake of judging, but I don't know how much it actually serves us because it sort of pulls us out of our humanity. That's my experience. And as a writer, I want to lean into people's humanity because I have to write people with humanity who are flawed and contradictory and complicated.
I have to interject here that just because we do that or want to do that doesn't mean we can do that. And this is what sort of fascinates me. A whole bunch of years ago, I was a co-host of a show called Arts Alive at the Algonquin, and the theme of the show was that a very famous person would invite his or her friends on. They would have lunch at the Algonquin at a round table, and then I would join them. And in case it got too inside baseball, that was my role. I introduced everybody, and then you, as the guest host, started the conversation. And one of the shows featured Wendy Wasserstein, Paul Rudnick, Christopher Durang. They all had gone to the Yale Drama School together. Right. And at some point, it did get very inside baseball. Do you remember the time Professor So-and-so did this? My point being that I said, we got to get this back on track. And I looked at Wendy, and I asked her, how do you write a play? Mm. And I'm going to ask that question to you, too, because for people who can't imagine that, even though they're in a movie theater or in a theater engrossed in what's going on, how in God's name do you get that dialogue going? I'm in awe of that. But how do you do that, Alex? Go for it.
Well, you know, when you're sitting in a restaurant and you're with someone and they say to you, what are you doing? You say, I'm listening to the people next to me. Don't talk. You lean into conversation that's suddenly interesting. It usually has something to do with conflict or an argument or something brewing that looks like you'll take your eyes away from the person you're with whom you have no problem, and you'll focus on the problem of that other couple or whoever you're listening.
That doesn't mean you can translate that to the page. I'm being difficult here because—
No, you start there. You start with something that really, well, for me, that is lines of dialogue, a moment in time that has a magnet and it draws you into it and you just then, you can't help but explore it. You just explore it.
And it's a natural act. It just kind of flows out of you, even though I understand there must be many levels of edits or whatever, but all of a sudden you find yourself, as they say, I mean, it just poured out of me.
Yes. Well, you know, I started Big Sky after I heard someone explain to me that some people in hospice get well and leave hospice, like 1% or 0.5% of people who they find, they and I thought, wow, that's fascinating. Really? You're facing something so absolute and you're going to go the other way against all expectation? Well, that's a miracle. I'm interested in that. That's a complexity. It's surprising, right? Look at your face when you heard it. It happens very rarely. It's usually because somebody's decided, that's it, I'm done. I don't want to fight whatever it is they're fighting anymore. And what they have is not terminal. And so something happens and they get out.
Yeah.
And so what a great perspective to have. You know, you're ready to surrender everything and suddenly something changes big. And that really was the beginning of a play.
Big Sky is more recent. So let's talk about that play specifically. So what's that about?
I started that play with this kind of thing, with people I spend a lot of time with who seem to me to be very... What's the word? They have a lot of choices. These people are entitled. They're exposed to a lot of comfort, and yet their lives are uncomfortable. Why are they uncomfortable in their skin? What is it about them that makes them uncomfortable? They're looking for something to calm them down, to
hold on to.
Yes, to
a raison d'être?
To organize the complexity they feel about their lives, to help them confront their own mortality, to calm them down as change becomes the norm in their life. And they're holding on, they're latching on, they're grabbing and grasping. And what does that look like? What does that sound like? It sounds like a lot of conflict, argument, irritation, desperation.
The big sky is also comedy.
Yes. And so when you have, you know, all those kinds of
forces.
Yeah. Working against you, on you, inside you, it can be funny because it's so human.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't grasp in mm-hmm. the face of mortality? Who doesn't feel desperate about getting older at times? Who wishes their children would be different? You know, who doesn't mm-hmm. wish their children would be different or their husbands would miraculously change after 17 years of marriage to make the marriage seem like it still had energy in it? So all those things are what I'm writing about in Big Sky.
So when you finished writing it, you figured what? I really have something here.
I thought I might have something. I mean, I always hope to have something. And then I give it to actors to read.
Mm-hmm.
I work at a place that I worked as an actress too, that is a wonderful workshop for almost every new play you see, including Hamilton, was developed at New York Stage and Film. It's a great, great laboratory up at Vassar. And it's been around for about 25 years. In fact, some of my friends from grad school started it. And it's just... It's elemental for me as a playwright to begin to hear my work with really great actors in a safe atmosphere where I'm not judged right away. And I develop the play there.
Do they provide the actors for you to do your reading?
Yes, they have.
Even though they may not be the most appropriate.
They get such wonderful actors. I mean, really incredible. And I was very lucky. And we worked up there. Craig Bierko was in the original workshop. And it was very... It's funnier than I thought it would be.
So you knew you had something there.
Yeah.
Did you have that same feeling with all of your produced plays? I got something here.
Yeah. I mean, you learn. Yeah, I always obviously was following the trail of something that felt like it was alive and had a pulse and it deserved to be a full length. Not every play does.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every time it gets on a stage, you learn so much more about it. I mean, I've been lucky enough to have almost all my plays produced in large venues. And sometimes that's a great thing. And sometimes it's a little like shocking
mm-hmm.
because you think, oh, it's not finished or it's not quite finished. And if you're lucky enough to have another production of it, that's great.
Do you like to see that your plays have 9 lives?
Yes, I do. And many of my plays are done regionally. Omnium Gatherum, of course, been done all over the world.
9/11 was right. The catalyst for that play.
Right.
Talk about that play.
So Teresa Rebeck, who's a very esteemed playwright, and I were on the phone literally while the attacks were going on. And we were so immediately compelled to write about it. And we did something that most playwrights never do. We wrote it together. Really, looking back, I don't know how we did that, but we did it.
It's usually not a collaboration.
No,
it's playwriting.
Not.
It's very personal.
It's so personal that it makes it impossible to do together. But because of the subject matter and because there was so much a feeling of needing to reach out to understand what was happening in the world we live in. I mean, these kinds of attacks happen in other places often. They're not as special.
Right, and they're not in our backyard.
No, and this one was, and it created such interest on our part to understand the world in its complexity much more. That we both did a lot of research. We slid up the characters and we started writing for these characters. And then we put them all at a dinner table because what would bring them together, as opposed as many of them were in their worldviews, food. We all have to eat together. And we're eating with a woman who's created this beautiful, delightful meal. As if Martha Stewart would have created
mm-hmm.
it, sort of appropriately, inappropriately post 9/11 meal, and where food was, you know, was a gastronomic event. And then she invited guests that she thought would be interesting. And of course, none of them really got along, and they held different, potently different points of view, and they had to still pass the bread.
So this was a political play.
Yeah.
Your first?
No. All my plays have some, so I don't like to call them political plays because I'm most interested in people dealing with issues that we all deal with that somehow make us part of the politic. I mean,
Lord knows you have your work cut out for you in this day.
Well, it's always interesting. And what's most interesting for us, even, you know, especially in, look, all plays, you have to argue for all characters. Nobody belongs on stage unless they believe something.
And they have a purpose.
And yes, and they are willing to fight for it because otherwise I'm speaking, the characters aren't speaking.
Gotcha.
And I don't particularly like to hear myself put words into characters for my benefit.
As if you were pontificating?
Yes, I'm not interested in that at all. As a matter of fact, like what I said in the beginning, I'm so compelled by a contradiction. I'm so interested in people who can hold points of view past the point that's almost makes sense. I mean, for instance, what we've just gone through right now with
the election.
Yeah, the election is so jarring to me. I don't yet know how I would write about it because it is already a satire in and of itself. I think that Omnium Gatherum gave us an opportunity to learn about points of view that we didn't even hold ourselves. And then we had to create characters that would then claim those points of view.
So it almost was an evolving process for you. It started with one thing, and then you watch how it may take another path. I mean, you have the basic idea there, but as
we said, all these people need to be at a dinner table. They have to be at a meal, and they're going to try to finish the meal. That's it. We get all these people, sort of an Edward Said type character. We have a feminist. We had a very pro-Zionist author.
How many people were at the table?
I think there were 9, including a terrorist. And by the end of the play, you weren't really sure who was actually living and who had died.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a political satire, but I'm not even sure that in today's age it would be satire anymore.
I hear you. Yeah. How much of an influence did your uncle play in your life, Bernie Gersten? Anything at all?
Oh,
or no?
Of course. I mean, I admired him. I mean, he was
Did you ask for advice?
I did. I sometimes asked for advice. I mean, I asked for his guidance a few times, especially when I was launching my playwriting career. He's a very, very sort of proletariat, not-for-profit, believes in the artist, facilitator as a producer. I mean, he believes in the artist's craft and that the artist deserves time on stage.
Well, he is an institution.
He is, and he's an inspiration. He's so well-spoken. He's very inspired and inspiring. He's interesting and interested. And yes, of course, he did have a...
Did you have him read some of your works?
I did. I mean, you know, I definitely didn't want to put him on the spot. I prefer to have him come and just be in the audience of my work.
And that leads me to something that I've thought a lot about. What is that like, whether it be a review or people weighing in on your work? Is it the analogy fair that somebody's talking to you about your child? You know, do you feel that protective or that naked and vulnerable if somebody says something negative?
Somebody says something negative. Oh, somebody always
says something negative. Hello.
The first play I did was a big success in Chicago and won awards. And then it came to New York and it was at the Martin Beck Theater where it clearly
didn't belong a Broadway house.
It didn't belong on Broadway, but that's where the producers took it.
Because the show was more intimate?
Did not belong in an 1,100-seat theater. It belonged in a 300-seat theater.
Off Broadway.
But I was, you know... I was on a ride.
Yeah.
And that was the offer. The offer was to go on Broadway.
Well, what idiot wouldn't have said?
Especially your first play.
How old?
I was like 29. Was I 31 or 32?
Well, that's really young.
So I think that I had just had a baby. I was newly married. And, you know, I knew I had been in plays that were flops. I mean, I call it flop sweat. I was going to write a play called Flop Sweat, but then I thought, you want to relive this whole experience all over again? It was, the play has been done many times since.
Which play is that?
It's called My Thing of Love. I would say that production was just ill-suited for the space because you have to you have to fill a space. And when you fill a space that big, it can seem distorted.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt distorted. And I think as brilliant as Laurie Metcalf is and was in the production in Chicago, the show was different in New York.
But could critics see that?
Some could
see her performance versus...
Yes,
what
I didn't read all of them. I
was going to ask you, do you do that?
I don't read them all. At that time, my husband was... We went to a pizza parlor. We read the review after the opening night party started to die down very quickly. And it was a very...
A Times review?
It was a New York Times review by Vincent Canby, who
wasn't
really a theater critic.
Film critic, yeah.
And he took me to task, and it was... I had to decide that I would do it again and live through something like that.
Because you were wounded, clearly.
Yes, he did mean to wound me. I don't know him at all, but...
Well, you know how people say those four words in the English language that make me crazy, which are, don't take it personally.
Yeah, don't take it personally. Well, I wouldn't be a writer if I didn't take it.
Well, how can you not take that stuff personally?
Well, it was so different from what had been written in Chicago. And Chicago's a theater town, too.
Sure.
So you have, like I said, you
the
have
balance.
To hold the contradictions. So it's a little of this, a little of that. I mean, I've had plays. Omnium Gatherum, for instance, got uniformly great reviews and a couple of very solidly negative ones. We don't remember the negative ones because there was a finalist for the Pulitzer and everything, but they were diametrically different from the positive ones. And of course, John Lahr's reviews have always been so inspired because I learned from them.
And they've been fair, you think?
I love them. Mm-hmm. I learn from them. He gets the work. He sees layers and intricacies. He writes his criticism like a writer writes. He's leans in.
Mm-hmm.
He looks to discover what is it she had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
He's adventurous. That's how I experience him as a playwright. And his reviews, I learn from them.
So they're not... personal
no.
attacks. He's
they're meaty.
Mm-hmm.
They're intrigued.
Whether he likes it or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, both of the times, I mean, he wrote a review of Omnium Gatherum that was my uncle called me and said, that's a one-of-a-kind review.
Wow.
It was just really compelling.
Has your uncle ever produced any of your plays?
He can't.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He can't. It's just too... nepotism.
We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wanted to ask you the obvious question. Are you working on anything now?
Well, I'm working on a television show, a pilot. Because of Big Sky, I was given a couple of opportunities that I'm happy to have. And I'm writing a rewrite of Big Sky also, because they're trying to bring it to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens with that. It was directed by John Rando, who directed On the Town. And he's really talented and lovely person to work with. So I'm very excited about the rewrite. I learned a lot from the production of the play in L.A., and I'm working on this pilot.
And so you cross boundaries. Clearly, when you were acting, you acted in television and film and on the stage. Would you like to write a film?
I don't know about a film. I mean, I think I feel more comfortable in television right
mm-hmm.
now. I've written a little bit.
And it's okay that you're over, you're in New York as opposed to the West
yeah,
Coast?
Yeah, fine.
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. And now that my children are almost grown, I travel back
and
forth.
Back and forth.
To, yeah, Los Angeles.
So have you professionally lived the dream?
Oh, gosh. I live the life. I like living the life. I don't want to create a dream of something that then... is never met by
unattainable.
Reality. Yeah, I like to live in reality, and
mm-hmm.
I like my reality, and I enjoyed my experiences. I've learned so much. I've worked with so many wonderful people, and I have more to say.
I was going to say, you still have a lot of life
yeah.
left in you,
yeah.
and with every passing day, you could just close your eyes and point, and there's a topic. Or
I have to control my reactivity.
I get it. Alex Vassalaros, thanks so much for
You're
having
so
a conversation with
you.
Me. I really enjoyed it, and I learned a lot, too.
Oh, great. Good.
I'm not going to leave here and start to write a play. I'm in awe of people who do those things, but it was just, it's so great to go inside, you know, and talk about how you can do these things.
Yeah.
It's
yes.
wonderful. Thanks
great.
Again.
Thank you so much.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Yeah.
in celebration of the joy.